I just say that I really missed you guys quite a lot while I've been away. And the reason being is because while I've been on my study tour, everything that we've been learning has been for the purpose of coming back and putting things into practice in the church context. So I've been thinking about, like, okay, how does this work for this particular person or in this particular context? And every time I think about, oh, I miss people. And I also was aware of the fact that the middle weekend I was away was the weekend that the youth and children were running their service. And I hear by all accounts they did a really awesome job. So I was a bit upset to be missing that. But I was very, very grateful for the trip that I've been on. And I'm looking to share a few of my reflections with you this morning. I'm not going to speak for very long today. First things first, I am fully aware, the theme for the Orange Conference was for our neighbours, and I am fully aware that neighbours doesn't have a U in it when you're in the US. Those of you who know me know that I'm a bit of a grammar nut, so you know that that drove me a little bit crazy. But I realised I was in America. You can use American English in America. I had to tell myself that when I was huddled over in the fetal position, going, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. So the theme was for our neighbours, so you'll have to get used to neighbours not having using it from time to time. And just an update on the Orange philosophy, for those of you who aren't aware of the Orange philosophy, or like, we have covered a little bit of it at church in the past, but I'll just give you an update. Could I have my next slide, please? So Orange is essentially based on the idea that church and family should be partnered together in the discipleship of the next generation. The church is essentially represented by yellow, the light of the world, the word of God that is available and be disseminated and processed from the church. And then red for the heart of the family, where people gather the warmth. You put those two together, if you combine yellow and red, you get orange. If you didn't know that already, write it down. It's important to know. But that's basically the whole thing that the Orange philosophy has been based on. It was sort of born out of a church in Atlanta about a decade or so ago, and has evolved into this philosophy that people have used. So that was basically the underpinning foundation of the conference that I was attending. Everything we learned is sort of, it was understood that you would sort of know where that was coming from. So just that's sort of the main thing that everything was bought from. So as long as you know that, the rest of it will start to make a little bit more sense. Now, the spin-off from it was for our neighbour. So we got all this really cool graphic stuff like that, and a bag that they gave us which has for our neighbours on it, because I actually picked up a few books. So there were a few things that they were focusing on at the conference this year. Like, so some of the things they focused on was phases. And so I picked up the book It's a Phase, which is also available here in Oz, but I got it over there, which talks about the different phases of children, basically from birth to graduation, and talks about what the specific spiritual needs are at different phases of life as we're growing up. So that was really useful. And they did this beautiful installation in the main arena, which had literally, like, it was like an installation of a child's bedroom going through the ages as a child grows up. And they had these things which they call legacy marbles, which were basically jars of marbles. And each marble represents a week of a child's life. So when a child is born, you fill, it's something like however many, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but each number represents a week in that child's life until they graduate from high school. And the process is that you take a marble out each week as a reminder of the time that you have with your child, because phase philosophy is essentially based on when we realise how little time we have, we make more time of the time that we do. Make more of the time that we do. So that's a book I'm looking forward to digesting, and I actually got to go to one of Kristen Ivey's sessions, so I'm a bit of a fanboy. I picked up Kerry Newhoff's book. We got to spend half an hour with him, and he signed it for me. So I've got a famous person's autograph. Kerry Newhoff. If those of you who did the parent stream at the Equip Sunday a couple of weeks ago, he was the guy on the video. He's really tall in real life. I bought a book by Reggie Joyner, and I bought a book from the Fuller Youth Institute, which we went and visited in Los Angeles. So lots of things for me to process and bring back, but I've managed to basically narrow down today. I'm only going to talk about some of the stuff that I heard at the Orange Conference, simply because if I try to talk about everything, we'll be here forever. So one of the main things that I, probably my standout session at the Orange Conference was one that I went to with a guy called Stuart Hall. Now, Stuart Hall is the guy who writes a lot of the student ministry stuff. He writes a lot of the student ministry stuff for North Point, which is Andy Stanley's church. So he does a lot of the stuff in there. And I went to his session, and his session was called Four Spiritual Habits. But basically, if I could rename his session, it would basically be How to Be a Youth Pastor in Under an Hour. Like, it was that good. And it was a really, really useful session to remind me a lot of the stuff that that's important in my role and what I do. And it was really sort of quite grounding and transformative for myself to sort of look at what he was actually teaching and think everything he said was actually gold. I'm like, yes, I love this. One of the things is probably my absolute standout quote from the entire time that I was there. One, I have not been able to get this saying out of my head ever since I went away. And it says, as you can see on the screen, it doesn't really matter what our students know unless what our students know really matters. Student ministry is basically their version of youth ministry, high school ministry. They call it student ministry. And I was thinking about that after I came back and I was like, it's so true. It does not matter what our students know unless what our students know really matters. So I was thinking during the session and then in the evenings after the conference and over the last week I've been back, I was like, what is it that we're teaching our kids that really, really matters? What are some of the stuff that we should be working towards that really matters? Because I was thinking about it that there'll come times in our students' lives where they'll be staring down the barrel of a fight between themselves and the powers of this dark world and the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. That's a promise that's made in Ephesians chapter 6, that those are things that we're going to have to face. And when facing that, it's not going to be that helpful to know the books of the Bible in order or the fact that Thessalonians is spelt with two S's and one L. Now, that information is kind of important anyway. Now, don't get me wrong, because it helps you find your way around the Bible, and also if you're Googling something from Thessalonians, you want to be able to spell it probably, otherwise you get that really irritating, did you mean? And I don't like getting those. But the point is, it's like I was thinking, what are the things that really, really matter? And he talked about clarifying the win. Clarifying the win is, what is it that when we have someone who graduates from our youth and children's and next gen ministries graduating from high school, as Bonnie is about to do, that Zara's recently done, that Benjamin and Joshua are going to do next year, once they get to that point, what are the things that we want them to know? What are the things that we want them to be able to do? What is the win? I'm really, really looking forward to having that conversation with you all. I've already got a fair few ideas, some of them I stole from this guy, but there are a lot of things to think about. One of the big things for us is obviously in our church, and our church culture is hearing from God. Unfortunately, that was one of the ones that he came up with. So he came up with four things that were actually really, really important to give an overarching understanding of what it means to be a sort of a properly developed, if you will, Christian. Being able to do these four things competently. Hearing from God, praying to God, talking about God, and living for God. Essentially, all four of those things make up the Christian life and what the Christian life looks like, being able to do those four things. So there's a lot more in each of them that he covered that we will hopefully talk more about in the coming months about what it actually means to be competent at hearing from God. We've got a really good tool for that. It's called the Kairos Circle. Praying to God, what does it look like to be able to pray, to be able to come before God when you're facing the battles that we've talked about and actually be able to know that God is there, that God knows the battle, that God understands the battle, and most importantly, that God has already assured the victory for that battle through Christ. What does talking about God look like? That can be a really, really challenging one for the next generation. It's usually pretty easy until you get to about 6 or 7. Once from sort of 7 to 17, it becomes really, really hard, and then you might get a little bit better at it as you go into your young adulthood. But we want everybody to be good at it, whether they're a toddler, a preschooler, in primary school, whether in our student ministry, whether they're a young adult, whether you're retired, whether you're a parent, whether you're not a parent, whether you're middle-aged, whether you're whatever, being able to talk about God, and finally being able to live for God. What does a life that lives for God look like? Ooh, that must have been important. So essentially, one of the big takeaways for me that I want to look at talking about over the next few months and implementing is thinking about what is the win? What is the win for us at Encounter Baptist Church? What do we want to churn out students and young adults? What do we want them to look like? What do we want them to know? What do we want them to be competent in when they leave our next-gen ministries and take on their roles, worship leading in our church, for instance? What do we want that to do? We've got some good examples to go by already, so we're doing some good stuff. I'm happy with that. There was another thing that I'm going to pause on that, because one of the elements of the win, which I want to talk about, just sort of a little tangent, because I'm a bit of a fanboy of Andy Stanley. Andy Stanley is the senior minister of North Point Christian Church, and he, which is a church that we visited, and his sort of, that was the group that founded the Rethink Group and Orange Philosophy. And he's written a lot on leadership, like even secular leaders refer to Andy Stanley's stuff. But he did a sermon on the second morning. He was speaking, and he talked about how there's a difference between vertical morality and horizontal morality, which is a truth that's really, really important to know, because in the old, vertical morality suggests that as long as you're okay with God, it doesn't matter how you are with people. Like, you can have people that you don't like, that you loathe, that you're openly disloving to, and still be okay with God in your mind. But when Christ came, and under the new covenant, our law is to love God, but to love our neighbour as ourselves. And it was just connected to the theme of for our neighbours. So he talked about this idea that vertical morality horizontal morality is what God is looking to us to do. Being okay with our neighbours is what it is evidence that we're actually okay with God. And he came up with this absolute cracker of a quote, which I want to share with you, which you've already read. If we're not careful, we will orient our children towards obeying an invisible God rather than loving a visible people. It can be very easy. So this comes back to teaching our kids what really matters. What really matters is not simply being okay with God regardless of how the rest of the world is doing. What really matters is being in love with the rest of the world as evidence of the love that we have for God. So a couple of points to get the ball rolling on clarifying the win and what we want our next generation to look like when we're sort of ready to release them. But how do we get there? I'm glad you asked. I went to another session which really stuck in my mind, which was one on working with teams and all that sort of stuff. And it talked a lot about strategy with working with teams. And it talked about the fact that strategy is the key to unity. Mission is not. See, rarely will anybody ever disagree with the mission, because the mission of the church is generally the same. It might be worded differently for different churches, but essentially we want to do up in and out. We want to have a relationship with God. We want to have a relationship with others. And we want to be reaching out to other people. Now, people might word that differently. People might have a different way of putting it. But essentially, it's all about proclaiming Jesus and loving God and knowing God and all that jazz. And I'm sure you could think of buzzwords of your own that go into church mission statements. It's really easy to get people on board with the mission. We generally agree with what we want. Where we butt heads is strategy. How we're actually going to implement the mission. And I was thinking about this because this was a session on volunteer leadership, and he opened it by saying, yes, it's very challenging because you're working with people who are doing stuff for free. And totally get that, because it's really important. And I do, and I hope I do. And if you don't feel like I get that, and tell me if you don't feel like I get that, because I want to know that so I can be better at getting that. Got it? I basically just want to say, it's like, I get paid for what I do. We know that. I understand that most of my leaders don't. And if ever it feels like I don't understand that, I want to be told, because I do get that, and I want to make sure that you guys feel like I understand that and I'm working with you in a way that understands that. And it got me thinking while I was in this session, because it was a really good session for me. I really enjoyed it. We talked about how strategy, needing to be unified on strategy, because that's ultimately where all the friction comes from. I thought about back to the various times I've butt heads with people in the church and volunteers generally. And I thought about almost every time David and I butt heads, every time I've seen David butt heads with others or I've butt heads with other people, it's always a strategy thing. It's rarely about the mission, because we all want the same stuff. But it's about being unified on strategy. So after we've clarified our win, one of the next things we need to work on is actually working on a unifying strategy, and a strategy that we can get on board with and can work with together, so that we are what David is always talking about to me, about standing shoulder to shoulder with people rather than standing toe to toe. Because it's very easy to stand toe to toe with each other and go, oh, I think this is the best way to do it. No, I think it's, and sort of, rather than, well, we both want the same thing, so let's stand shoulder to shoulder and work about how we're going to get that and get where we're going. See, the funny thing about that is that David's been trying to teach me that for like the last 2 years, but when I heard someone else say it, I'm like, ah! So let's hope he doesn't listen to the recording. No, he probably will listen to the recording, but no, it was really, really useful, because one of the things that actually also came up at the conference was the passage from Ecclesiastes that says, there is nothing new under the sun. That which has been will be again. So most of what I learned in the series wasn't necessarily new, but it was stuff that was very transformative and grounding, in the sense that it was a recalibration of where we're meant to be and how things are meant to work. So that's sort of the main two things that I've brought back from me from the time I've been away. Think about what are the wins that we are looking for our next generation, and then how can we implement a strategy to make sure that we are all on the same page moving forward and understand why we do things a certain way and get there together. So I'm really, really looking forward to the conversations and the implementation stuff that gets going to get born out of that. One final point that I'd like to make about it before I sort of do a little plug and then close is that, as I've mentioned earlier, the theme was for our neighbours. And so each of the keynote speakers, they had a theme that was connected to For Our Neighbours. So For Our Neighbours was all about, when we're for our neighbours, we ... and then different speakers would speak into a different thing about that. And the thing about this was, like, each speaker was like one of the legends of youth ministry. People whose books I read when I was studying youth ministry and who, like, I'm like, oh, like all in one place. It was crazy. So it was really, really exciting. I'm like, oh my gosh, that person and that. I was a bit of a fanboy. It was pretty cool. Anyway. But one of the ones that Reggie Joyner was talking about, Reggie Joyner is the founder of Orange. He came up with this one where he talked about, when we're for our neighbours, we never let parents parent alone. And he did he was sharing based on that in this world often we do have parents parenting alone. And one of the things he mentions is that when parents come across a crisis, they'll often turn to Google to solve their problem. To which he responded and suggested that, well, in the church we have the Word of God, which is a little bit better than Google. He didn't use those words. He said it was a lot better than Google, infinitely better than Google. And so one of the things I loved about that quote and that particular session that he gave was that that's exactly what we want to be about here at this church. We want to make sure that the parents in our church are never parenting alone. As the youth minister, youth and children's minister, one of the things that I've often overheard in my time is I've often overheard parents talking with each other in our church community about, oh, I've got this issue with, you know, X, Y, and Z. And then another parent who's either gone before or has slightly older children says, oh, yeah, well, when our kids were that age, we tried doing this, that, and the other, and or maybe this would work, or something like that. Those are some of the best conversations that I love overhearing. I generally don't try to eavesdrop too much because sometimes that stuff is personal, but I know that those conversations happen, and I'd love to see more and more of them happening in our church. And it's a wonderful thing because for those of us who already understand where we sort of fit into the body of Christ and understand our positions in the kingdom, we sort of know that we have that covenant relationship with one another. But for parents who are out there in our, and Ashwood and Chadston and our wider networks, who might not know that the church is available to them to help them parent, whether or not they want spiritual input with that, or whether they would prefer to just stay on the side. One of the other sessions I talked to about, if you're talking with, little side note, if you're talking with young people whose parents aren't necessarily that keen on them getting involved with the church thing, it's like, always remind them, church philosophy, love, honour, obey your parents. Apparently that works. I'm keen to give it a try. Anyway, coming back, never letting parents alone. We need to be a church that never lets parents parent alone. Now, I'm a little bit limited in my experiential practice of parenting. Can't really give you much information about that. But I can do research. And I have done a lot of research, and I can let you know what some of the people who are out there, especially spiritual development stuff, I can do God stuff, that I can do, that's going on. That is all stuff that I'm more than willing to be available for, and I really want to encourage everyone for us to understand that parents never have to parent alone and to be there for one another. I think that was one of the best things. And if you want a little bit of help yourself without not parenting alone, but without needing to always rely on physically being in the same room to ask a question, shameless plug. This is something that came up at the Orange Conference. It's called the Parent Q app. So the Parent Q app has been written based on sort of the phase philosophy that has come out of Orange, that at different times in a child's life, depending on the phase they're going through and the different spiritual, mental, physical and emotional issues that they're facing, they're going to need different spiritual truths at those different times. When you get the Parent Q app, what you do is you write down, you put a photo of your child, you put their name, your name, an email address and their date of birth. It will then calculate how many weeks you've got left until graduation. Now, it's an American app, so the graduation will be sometime in June because that's just the way they do the school year. So you'll have to have a little bit of a creative play with it to understand where it fits in. But essentially, it talks about what are some of the biblical truths that your child needs in the particular phase that they're going through. And rather than having to sort of try to do endless research, it's just right there in front of you. You pick the child you want, you swipe up for them, and then it has some information about it. So if you're interested in exploring that app, it's a free app that you can download. I strongly suggest you get onto that. I've downloaded it and I put my niece and nephew in there. So that's something that I would encourage. But that's sort of the end of what I wanted to share with you all today. So I thought I've got a few moments that I'll open up for some Q&A if anybody has any questions about my trip. Edwin. The question was I part of a touring party? Yes, I was. So the Baptist Union of Victoria put out a call for any next-gen ministers that were interested in going on the trip and whether their churches would be capable of sponsoring them to go as well. I was one of the people that said, yeah, my church said, that's okay. I'm interested if you pick me. And I was one of the ones that they picked. We took 8 people in total. 7 of them were from the BUV. Kylie Butler, who is our overarching person, organised it. There was regional ministers, there were city ministers, big churches, large churches, and there was also a Church of the Christ person who was connected to Kylie who came along. So it was a group of 8 of us that went together. Yes. How long was the conference? The conference went for 3 days. So we flew in on Monday into Atlanta, and the conference started on Wednesday. So the first day was basically all just breakout sessions. And then one main session in the evening, which is sort of when a lot of other people joined. Then there was the big day, the second day, and then Friday was the third day, which was all main sessions. So 2 days of breakouts and 1 day of just main sessions. So the first day, which was the U-Lead breakout day, there was about 4,500 people there, and there was about 8,000 people at the entire conference. It was a decent sized conference. I've got some photos, which I will put on my Facebook page in time of the auditorium we were meeting in. Yes, Joey.
Like the American
It's very, very tempting. The question was, can we turn the hall into some of the youth group rooms that we saw while we were overseas? David has actually asked me to write a report for the building committee about how we can structure our next gen spaces to make that. And I saw some really, really fantastic things that I'd like to talk about. One of the interesting things, oddly enough, about their next gen spaces, particularly middle school and youth ministry rooms, is none of them had chairs. Intentionally, they didn't have chairs so that you didn't have to move chairs back and forth. And the idea of the philosophy of that is they wanted to promote sitting in circles rather than in rows, because you learn in rows, but you grow in circles. That was one of the philosophies that we learnt along the way. So stay tuned. I'd like to do something along those lines, but we'll just have to wait and see. And obviously most of our next gen spaces will also be multi-purpose, so being able to work the two together is going to be important.
Did the jet lag get you to a point where you were able to comprehend what happened on the first day of the conference?
Did the jet lag get me was the question, to be able to comprehend the conference. This trip was structured very well. We flew out of Melbourne on Monday morning and we arrived in Los Angeles before we left, because that's the way it works. Then we were at Los Angeles for a bit. We had a break. We got on our plane to Atlanta. We sat on the plane for 2 hours waiting for a pilot. That was really odd for us, but it happened. Ask anyone that was there. So we waited for our pilot. We arrived in Atlanta on Monday night. Tuesday, we had a day free. So the conference didn't start till Wednesday. So on the Tuesday, we just did some stuff in Atlanta. So we went to CNN that day, oddly enough, and did a tour of them. So that was so I learned stuff. That was a very spiritual experience. Yes. it was a well-planned trip to make sure we had breaks and rest so that we could actually properly learn. Probably got room for one more. Yes, Elsie. That is an excellent question. Thank you so much for that question. The question was, were there any cultural differences that I noticed that whether that affects what we could practice and stuff? Absolutely, 100%. And it was actually really, really wonderful, because Atlanta in particular, like, an average-sized church there is 2,000 people. The churches there are massive. And we were driving along some of the highways and there'd be literally 8-10 churches just all next door to each other. And they're all beautiful and large. And so it was actually realizing, because I'm sitting there thinking, okay, so this is the culture that's given us the books and the resources that we use in youth ministry. So when they talk about this and, having a small group of being 40 people, okay, now I understand where they're coming from. And sort of because we live in a far more post-Christian society than the US, it was actually quite humorous. A couple of times they said that they were post-Christian. I'm like, come talk to me in 30 years, then we'll talk. Yeah. But it was really interesting. So no, that's a really good question. And yes, we did. Plenty of things. You're like, okay, now I understand why they can just do stuff like that and not have, like, especially when it comes to ministry in high schools and evangelism ministries to young people, because our school system is much more blocked against that than theirs is. Like, theirs, they're fully a bit more for it. So, great question, and yes, I did. Thank you. Well, that's me. I might close in a word of prayer, and then I'll invite our music team to come back up and lead us in our final song for this morning.